Hollywood's Mel Gibson recently produced the best war film since Saving Private Ryan, according to the New York Observer. Hacksaw Ridge, based on the true story of World War II hero Desmond Doss. And it says on the back here about unimaginable courage in the face of impossible odds. Talk about a remarkable and moving film about unimaginable courage in the face of impossible odds. Desmond Doss, an American soldier hero whose name is familiar to many, was a medic during World War II in Okinawa during the bloodiest battle of the war. He was the only American soldier in World War II to fight on the front lines without a weapon, as he believed that while the war was justified, killing was nevertheless wrong. He was a dedicated Christian and a conscientious objector. His guardian angels were his weapons. Now, as an Army medic, and you ought to see this movie, he single-handedly evacuated the wounded from behind enemy lines, braved fire while tending to soldiers, was wounded by a grenade and hit by snipers. Doss fearlessly performed many rescue operations in the Pacific Theater. His most amazing exploit involved the rescue of 75 wounded soldiers, lowering them over a steep cliff to safety, while enemy bullets flew all around him, sometimes coming so close he could feel them streaking by on Hacksaw Ridge. He could literally feel the presence of angels. President Harry S. Truman decorated Desmond Doss with the Congressional Medal of Honor on the White House lawn for his unwavering valor in the face of extreme danger. In fact, Doss was the first conscientious objector to ever earn the Congressional Medal of Honor. But Doss would not have been around to rescue those 75 soldiers had he not been rescued himself years before the war. Desmond and his young nephew Gary were playing on a beach along the Atlantic coast. Gary's new beach ball somehow got away from him and began drifting out to sea. Though not a very good swimmer, Desmond could not refuse his little nephew's appeal for him to go out and retrieve the ball. But the wind was blowing. Desmond swam through the shallow water for a few hundred feet before he realized that the widening distance between himself and the ball was caused by a strong undertow and ebbing tide. A feeling of desperation washed over him. He knew it would be impossible to swim back against the tide to shore. Well, if only he could catch up with the ball, then he could hold on to it as a kind of life preserver. But it was getting farther from him by each moment. But Desmond was used to praying, so he offered up this simple plea: Lord, help me. Desmond looked about. He could hardly be seen now from the receding shore, and the ball was now drifting completely from his sight. But then something else came into view. A small motorized fishing boat, out of nowhere. The two men in the boat appeared to be pulling in fishing nets and preparing to go farther out to the ocean. Desmond prayed that they would notice him. He called out but realized that the boat's engine drowned out his voice. Then the fishermen spotted the beach ball coming their way. One of them bent over the side of the boat and retrieved the ball. Peering around, they also spotted Desmond and immediately came to his rescue. One of the men reached over the side of the boat and said, "Let me help you in." Soon, the boat drew close to shore. The other fisherman asked, "Can you make it from here?" The water was shallow, so thanking the men, Desmond stepped out and waded ashore with his nephew's beach ball. On the beach, he immediately turned to wave at his rescuers. But there were no men. no boat, not even the wake of the boat's path through the sea. To this day, Desmond Doss believes that angels rescued him from drowning. And those same angels were with him, without question, at Hacksaw Ridge in World War II. Peter Marshall, famous chaplain of the United States Senate in the late 1940s, left the world with a rich legacy in his books of sermons and prayers. Well, a special angel experience that took place when Peter was about 17 made it possible for him to live and bless the world in his ministry. In his youth, Peter Marshall spent the summer working in the English village of Bamberg, just south of the Scottish border. One night, while walking back to Bamberg from a nearby village, he decided to take a shortcut across the heath. He knew the way. And he also knew that there was an abandoned quarry in the area, but he was sure he could avoid it. It was a dark, overcast night, and the wind moaned cheerlessly over the stark landscape. Suddenly, an urgent, commanding tone called out his name, Peter. Stopping, he asked, "Yes, what is it? What do you want?" Hearing no reply, he supposed that he imagined it from the sound of the wind. Walking on several paces more, he stopped again when the voice said with even greater urgency, "Peter!" This time Peter stood still, attempting to peer through the impenetrable darkness. Shifting his position slightly, he stumbled and fell to his knees. Cautiously reaching out before him to search over the ground, he found nothing there. He reached out farther. Nothing. In a semicircle just before him was nothing. Nothing but emptiness. He was standing on the brink of the quarry, a sheer cliff of terrifying height. No one could have survived a fall over the edge of that precipice. From that time onward, Peter Marshall resolved to be obedient to that voice, which he knew was sent by God. Surely it was the voice of Peter's guardian angel, the one commissioned, as it says in Psalm 90, verses 11 and 12, "For he shall give his angels charge over you, to keep you in all your ways. In their hands they shall bear you up, lest you dash your foot against a stone." HMS Richards, considered the dean of preachers since the birth of radio, when our grandparents, you know, were listening on cat's whiskers and crystal sets. Well, he tells a story about when his father, H.M.J. Richards, was a young boy over there also in Exeter, England. He witnessed a remarkable incident in his hometown that was indelibly etched on his young mind about angels. A young man named John Lee was accused and convicted of murder. Though he persistently maintained his innocence, he was sentenced to hang. Well, the night before his execution, young John Lee had a dream. He saw himself being led out of his cell and through the prison door to the gallows. There he ascended the 13 steps to the platform. A guard blindfolded him and placed the noose around his neck. After Lee said his last words, the executioner pulled the lever to spring the trap door, but nothing happened. And then John Lee woke up. Well, the following morning, young H.M.J. Richards joined with most of Exeter's population as they stood around the prison waiting to see the flag go up in the prison courtyard at the appointed moment to signal the accomplishment of the execution. They waited and waited in vain. The flag never appeared. John Lee's dream proved true. It all went just as he had seen in his sleep. The trapdoor refused to function. After their unsuccessful attempt, the guards led the prisoner from the scaffold. then carefully checked and oiled the simple machinery that operated the trap door. Placing a bag of sand on the trap door, they pulled the lever, saw the bag drop to the pavement below. Again, they placed Lee over the trap door, adjusted the noose over his neck, and pulled the lever with decisive force. But the trap stayed firmly locked in place. With grim consternation, the guards conducted Lee off the platform again and retested their equipment, only to find it in perfect working order. For the third time, they led their submissive prisoner to the place of his scheduled execution, making sure that the noose was snug and that he stood squarely on the middle of the trapdoor. They jerked the lever again. But the gallows refused to drop Lee to his judicially ordered death. Shaken by this turn of events, the warden telegraphed Queen Victoria with the baffling news. She ordered Lee's sentence to be commuted to life imprisonment, since they had not been able to execute him after three tries. Well, years later, the authorities freed John Lee when someone else finally confessed to the crime for which Lee had been unjustly condemned. What held up the trap door that was supposedly to hurdle Lee to his dreadful end? Surely, it was an angel sent by the Lord to protect an innocent man. Wouldn't it make sense for all of us to ask God to keep us very sensitive to the voice of His Spirit and His angels so that He could guide us through life according to His ideal plan? If we tapped into this high privilege, think of how many calamities we might avoid and how many blessings we might gain. This is God's promise to us in His Word, Isaiah chapter 30, verses 20 and 21. And though the Lord gives you the bread of adversity and the water of affliction, yet your teachers will not be moved into a corner anymore, but your eyes shall see your teachers. Your ears shall hear a word behind you saying, this is the way, walk in it, whenever you turn to the right hand or whenever you turn to the left.